Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. After 18 months of waiting, we're here to discuss season 2 of one of our favorite costume dramas, The Gilded Age. We're excited to track all the drama between Team New Money and Team Old Money as they fight for power in New York's high society at the end of the 19th century. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we are cousins who love to explore fantasy and sci-fi shows. But last year, we expanded our coverage to discuss our favorite period pieces. We kicked off that coverage with discussing the Gilded Age, and so we're back to discuss Julian Fellowes' newest project with more in-depth analysis of the show. You can find our episodes on Downton Abbey, Bridgerton, Outlander, and The Crown in your podcast feeds.
We're very excited to spend each week catching up with the Russells and the Van Ryn clan, and many of the rich characters in this costume drama. This week, we'll be heading to a very boring tennis match in Newport and escaping the mundane conversation of Mr. Morgan while we discuss season 2, episode 2.
Kinfolk Lore, though, is coming in hot with the adult content, like a blind date at a tennis match where your date is double-fisting what's on tap. Just because your last name is Morgan does not mean you have to be captain of the spirits. It's okay. It's crazy. Let's go.
So in this episode, we'll start with what's going on with Team Old Money. Marion is invited to a tennis match in Newport with Aurora, who wants to introduce her to Mr. Morgan, a wealthy potential suitor. Mr. Morgan turns out to be an obnoxious drunk, and Marianne is rescued first by the Russell children and then by her cousin, Dasha Montgomery.
When they going to figure this out, that if Aurora's trying to set some shit up, it is a bad plan?
Not according to her aunt, because Agnes Van Ryn is like, let's go. What's his name? Who cares? Does he have money? Let's meet him.
That's what Ada's like, yo. You might as well just, like, flag down any man in a carriage in New York City. Oh, my goodness.
Oscar has been sent packing by Mr. Russell, who's made it abundantly clear that Gladys is not interested in his marriage proposal.
This dude said he was going to let him down lightly. He was like, what? That shit was harsh. He was harsh.
I think my favorite part of it was he was like, I don't doubt that you would have done your best to make her happy. I'm like, wait, what? Like, you just read this man for filth, and then you're like, it was kind of an okay proposal.
But what I love about it is that Mr. Russell didn't just go in with that, where Bertha would have went in, like, already with her own mind made up. He went to Gladys and was like, what should I say? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then he worked it out with her that, hey, reflected back to her, this isn't the right match based on what she was saying she wanted. But it wasn't. I just thought that was so cool that he was just like, yeah, all right, I'm going to go in hot because she told me that she doesn't want to be with him. If she would have said and made a compelling argument to be with him, I wonder if he would have just rolled with it.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Agnes and Ada get to know the new rector a bit more. Or, you know, from Agnes's point of view, Ada gets to know him because she didn't get a word in edgewise. I was like, ma'am, everything is not about you.
What is going on with you today? Like, you couldn't say anything. You were such a chatterbox.
It's clear that Ada has a developing crush on this man. Very cute. Yeah. Very cute. He seems very adorable. Boring, though, but it's very cute.
I like him. I like him. I like his style. It's all right.
Peggy returns to 61st Street over the objections of Armstrong, the Van Ryn maid. She also returns to her newspaper job and the very attractive Mr. T. Thomas Fortune rejoins our cast.
And if you're a listener to the pod, you can only assume that if Andrea is saying this, that this motherfucker is going to be nefarious in some way. Like, right? There's going to be some motherfucking, like, thing that he does that you're going to be like, oh my God, this guy is a villain.
I take exception to that. I don't think he is a villain, nor do I think he is evil adjacent. I just think he's a good looking dude.
Listen, we're early in this journey.
At Ward McAllister's ball in Newport, Oscar is introduced to Miss Maud Beaton. And at this point in the story, I was definitely the Snoop gif that was like, who? Like, who? A wealthy heiress who has just returned to America after living in Paris.
Yeah. All right. Maud Beaton, just off the beaten trail. Mr. Russell, as I said, tells Gladys he'll back her choice, even if it means having a little riff with her mom. He wants her to find a love match. Since this is written by Julian Fellowes, I'm sure this promise will be important later. Like this kind of like thing, when he puts it down, the gauntlet has been thrown down. It's gonna happen, right? So, Larry Russell was hired by a lady named Mrs. Blaine, a wealthy widow who wants to renovate her dreary Newport home and perhaps some other things as well. She's taking, she wants something else happening. By the end of the episode, they become lovers, and Mrs. Russell is not about that life. She is not feeling this. She's very pissed off about this situation.
I would be too. Even in modern times, I would be annoyed by this. Like, what are you doing, Larry?
Does my guy, Mr. Russell, actually say the words, boys will be boys?
I think he does.
Like, what the fuck was happening in that scene?
And all she has to say is, I think Larry may be in over his head with Mrs. Blaine. And he's like, boys will be boys.
Well, I mean, Mrs. Blaine really is not here for, like, the long term. Like, she's making it very clear. She's like, you know what? I would like some young penis. That's what I would like. I mean, this is what she's saying. It's very clear. Like, I've been with this old dude. I took it on the chin. I inherited his money. I had to be with him for years. When I was young, my youth was wasted. It's time for some get back.
Yeah, I mean, power to Mrs. Blaine. I just don't know what Larry is doing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure either. But Larry's a good dude. I like Larry. And then Mrs. Russell has officially been chosen to lead the Met Gala's fundraising appeal. The whole Russell clan attends Ward McAllister's ball. There is a little scene that I find very funny. Like, at the tennis match, Marion and Larry are talking, and Mrs. Blaine rolls up and like, oh, hey, who is this? And she's like, oh, this is my neighbor. And then so at Ward McAllister's ball, she rolls up and she's like, oh, you again.
Yeah. Mad rude.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So at Ward McAllister's ball, there is a plot that Ward McAllister has given to Mrs. Russell to try to woo the Wintertons to get them to, join her cause at the Met, maybe getting a box in both places because, you know, she needs old money. When the Wintertons are introduced, plot twist, Mrs. Winterton, who was described as being young but not as connected to all the people in society, is the former lady's maid, Mrs. Turner. Mrs. Russell's lady's maid. Mm-hmm. The one who showed up naked in the bed of Mr. Russell. The one who which Mr. Russell did not do anything with, but also was like, yo, I ain't gonna say nothing. You'd be lying about the wrong shit, man.
This was shocking. But, you know, old girl wanted to climb the ranks. So she found a dusty old man that who had plenty of money that she could marry. I mean.
So let's talk about it. Let's talk about our new characters.
Okay, so Mr. Morgan gave me Mr. Collins from Pride and Prejudice vibes. And I feel like that is an insult to Mr. Collins because he wasn't a drinker. This dude is so annoying. She thinks she's gotten rid of him, he pops up again. This is a blind date from hell.
Gladys is trying to help her escape and then sees Oscar and then she's having to help her escape and somehow they get to the bottom. He's like, are you hiding from me?
Yes, in fact. Because you're annoying and you're drunk. I had to say that Oscar telling him to sleep it off was like the best part of the whole episode. I was like, thank you, Oscar, for doing something.
Yeah, it was good. It was super good. And it was and I think it just shows you that he's not, you know, Oscar, and I think there's a lot of growth with Oscar and Marion's like relationship in this,
yeah,
this
totally.
Season so
they're
far.
Definitely,
so,
they definitely have that very like warm cousin relationship, yeah. And they seem to have they seem to understand each other.
1000%. And then, you know, the other thing that I really love was, you know, Dashiell scooping in and Mr. Morgan like showing up with two drinks at the time and then going like, who is this? I thought I was supposed to be whatever, right? But the flex of Dashiell to be like, who should I bet on? And she's all like, well, Larry's friend is such and such. He's like, yeah, $50, which we did the math because we're nerds like this. We Googled what was $50 in 1883. It was like $1,500, all right? $1,500, he would just casually bet $1,500 on some dude he didn't even know just so he could spend a little time with Marianne. Definite flex for her on her behalf, for her. Mm-hmm. And then there's Mrs. Blaine. I don't have a problem with Mrs. Blaine, actually.
Yeah, I like Mrs. Blaine. I just think I think Mrs. Blaine is clearly too young to be a widow, but too old to be messing with Larry.
Yeah.
Other problem is that Mrs. Blaine is his employer.
Yeah, but she didn't give him that job because she didn't even see his work. She gave him the job on the spot. She very clearly, and I think Ward McAllister knew that too. She very clearly was interested in like him. You know
oh,
what I mean?
Totally. Like, but that's the problem. Like, she gave him she is now his only client. And she's very clearly trying to enter into a sexual relationship with him. It's a problem.
Yeah.
It's not appropriate. And she just has like the maturity. You know, she's a lot older than him. I think this is Larry's first fling.
Yeah. He's, you know, and men of that day, as he may or may not have he references, like, you know, they didn't normally do that with women in society. It was normally like, you know, sex workers, right? Like, so he's kind of like throwing that in his mom's face as like, yo, why are you tripping? Like, why are you bothering me? Like, I could be out here living reckless, but I'm not. Because I think ultimately Larry is saying this whole like, I'm just, you know, doing what other boys do, but obviously he has feeling, he's developing like a real liking to Mrs. Blaine.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Totally. And she's sweet and she's smart and she's not, he makes a very good point that she's not like the girls that his mother introduces him to, who he mostly finds silly. But I was like, okay, Larry, except if you would walk across the street.
The street, exactly. And Mrs. Blaine is picking up the vibes anyway, because Mrs. Blaine is like, yo, who is this? Oh, and you again. Like, she's a little tight because she's seeing like, oh, they're always talking. Like, friendly, but still talking. At this point, you know what I wish would have happened in this moment? Can we just figure this out to get Dashiell and Mrs. Blaine together? I think like that would have been like the move.
No, she's too old.
Mrs. Blaine is too old for Dashiell?
Dashiell is what, like 35?
No way. Dashiell, but she ain't that old. She gotta be like 35, 42. She's not that old. You think she's that old?
No, she's not elderly, but I don't know. I don't know.
She about Mrs. Russell's age.
I feel like Mrs. Russell's a little too old for Dash. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter, but
yeah, this is my fictitious, like,
I mean,
hope.
Could still happen.
Yeah,
could still happen. You think she wants kids though? Dashiell has a kid.
She may want kids because she never had kids with her previous husband, and
yeah, but that may have been intentional.
I know.
She may not want kids.
Yeah, but that's one of, I think, the issues, right? Is that I think she's at an age where she's no longer going to be able to have kids, right?
So then, like, she's not 40, you know, like,
yeah,
then,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
either
yeah.
She's old, she's a little bit too, I mean, I also don't, I think Dashiell, do they meet? I don't think they even meet.
Briefly, maybe?
That would be, I'm warming up to it. I'm warming up to it. That might be a good couple.
Dashiell doesn't even, I don't know. Dashiell seems older to me too. They made it seem like he was just young and the right age, but I was kind of like, yo, this guy is kind of old for Marion anyway. So that was my feeling in the
beginning. Okay, once again, I don't think anyone's considering Dashiell to be a suitor for Marion right now, but once again, back to Agnes's point, she doesn't care. Like, she does. She's not.
She said, does she have money? Does he have money? Check. That's it. Done. That's it. All right, cool. Oh, man. So what about Mrs. Beaton? Maude Beaton. What do we think of her? She's supposed to be possible.
She's super cute. Mm-hmm. I really like her. She seems very sweet. I also recognize this actress from somewhere, and I'm not quite sure where. But I just, again, why is Oscar, as soon as he learns that she might have some money, he's like, on it.
Yeah, yeah. And Aurora is like, oh, are you sure? Because, like, and why does everybody go to Aurora for the lowdown on, like, who a person is? Because
she's a busybody.
Yeah, there you go. That's, you know what? We were looking for that last episode. What if you had to describe Aurora Fane? Busybody. That is the word. That is the word. I love it. Yes, 100%. I mean, more on Miss Beaton, I think, like, you know, the fact that she's, like, the daughter of probably another titan of industry that we meet, but he's like not claiming her, like, you know, he takes care of her, but that's not, you know, it's like from another relationship, is kind of an interesting wrinkle. Like, I don't know, it seems like, you know, she's got money, she's, you know, like you said, she's good looking, she's at the party, and Oscar is, you know, that she checks, like his mom, those check all the boxes for him to meet the requirements. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. And good looking was optional, As Marion said.
100%. Like, I think that part is up to me.
Yeah. So what? There's a few things. We've talked about all this, all the new characters. There's some stuff that's going on with the downstairs crew. Let's talk about it. Like, I love some of the stuff here.
Yeah. So Jack, who is our lovable footman, I just love this kid, he's so cute.
Me too.
He's a footman in the Van Ryan household. I think he's a footman, but I'm not actually 100% sure that's his role, because they
is
don't
he a
really
entertain. Under butler, maybe, I don't know, maybe he's under
they
butler?
Don't really don't entertain, so they don't really need a footman in a household full of women, but whatever, I'm fine with that. He might mm-hmm. just be like, they might just have a footman so that Bannister doesn't have to do all of the kind of like heavy lifting and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's got this budding relationship with Miss Weber,
yeah,
who is Gladys's lady's maid, who is not having a great time, struggling in her new role, perhaps because she's not really prepared for it. And then he also has this other thing where he gets really interested in, like, how does an alarm clock work? And I always find people who are interested in how stuff works and why doesn't it work. Like, his thing is his alarm clocks, I guess, back then. And I did actually try to look into this a little bit, and I came up pretty short. I guess alarm clocks were really unpredictable. And so he's like not just accepting that as the standard. He's like, well, let me find out why. So I thought that was really nice. I really like Jack. He's like a very like fun character who just seems like a decent person.
Yeah, I agree. And he's like almost unfazed by Armstrong, who keeps throwing shade that he's trying to like figure out the alarm clock. Like it's kind of crazy. Like, right away she's throwing shade.
She's
like,
just
like,
not a nice person. I just don't understand. Are you okay, Armstrong? I mean, I know we know that she has a difficult situation at home, but I'm just like, yeah, come on, ma'am.
No, she's definitely not okay. And she's up to her old bullshit as well. Like, both Agnes and Peggy kind of like let her know what time it is. Like, I love that they give Peggy this scene to like, yo, you don't want a problem with me. Like, that's a great one. I love that happened.
Yeah, both scenes are like great, right?
Yeah.
First, Agnes is like, she's like, Peggy's coming back, are we gonna have a problem? And Armstrong is like, we are gonna have a problem. And then she's just like, okay, well then you can keep it packing, like I'm good, like we got another maid in this household, I'm gonna be aight.
Yep. Which makes her kind of like recant, and then she's like, well, what if she's mean to me? To which he's like, well, knowing Miss Scott, I'd say you'd have it coming.
I was crying. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. It was a good line. And then, you know, like, I thought that it was important. It was important that Peggy actually stand up for herself too, you know, because she was trying to be kind, you know?
Totally.
So I love that she says to her,
I don't have a problem with you. Like, you know, this doesn't have to be contentious. I'm not trying to bother you. So we'll see. I don't know. Armstrong just, I couldn't believe that Armstrong was still up to her usual crap after she was threatened to lose her job and then cried about it.
I think she just, you know, she's an unhappy person. She has her problems that we know of at home. And I think that, you know, even in how she's responding to Jack, it's not about race. It's about her not believing that there's anything possible to reach above your station, right? Like, to do anything beyond what they're doing. Like, just be happy that you have what you have and just hope for the best. You know what I mean? Like, totally. And that eats away at a person's ability to be optimistic or happy. But it's odd because normally these kind of characters, I'm just like, I don't really like Armstrong, but I don't wish ill on Armstrong either. You know what I mean? Like, I actually hope that she's fine.
I'll be the evil one. I'm cool if anything bad happens to Armstrong.
Yeah, I mean,
she's terrible. I know her situation at home is really awful, but like, she's terrible. She's mean to everyone for no reason, and they still treat her well. You know, like, that's the thing. Like, if Armstrong was like Miss O'Brien or Thomas from Downton Abbey, then I wouldn't feel the same way. But like, they're always trying to be nice to her, and she's just so nasty to everybody.
I feel like they're setting us up, though. That's why I'm trying to hedge, because I feel like they're setting us up to, like,
for a redemption arc?
For redemption of some sort.
Like, I don't think so, because O'Brien never got one.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe just hates Lady's Maze, like you said.
O'Brien, they opened season 6 of Downton Abbey with O'Brien just was gone. she just bounced in the middle of the night.
That was wild. Okay, that's a whole other. That was wild. I remember texting you about that. Like, what the hell? What just happened?
I know. I never looked into the story behind that. Like, if the actress just wanted off the show, but, they let her character go out evil. whatever.
She did. But you know what? All of this is real nice. Everything's great. But the heads of these staffs, the butler beef in these streets is still happening. Mr. Church and Bannister's beef continues. Bannister lets Church know he might be able to forgive him, but he won't forget what he did to him last season. He will not. And Church is trying to, like, you know, do the whole thing and forgive and forget. It's a funny thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope that we can put this behind us. No, sir. You almost got me fired.
Yeah, Bannister's not having for it.
Yeah, I mean, if it were me, I would be like, I might be friendly because that's professional, but like, you almost got me fired.
Mrs. Van Ryan last year, when she was like, heads have rolled for less. Oh, that shit was great.
And you can't, like, be disloyal to someone like Mrs. Van Ryan. Like, the fact that Bannister was allowed to keep his position was because she was in a good mood that day.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And then Mr. McNeil returns to the Russell house to try to look for Watson, but is intercepted by Mr. Church. And then Mr. Russell. Watson tells Mr. Church about his daughter and is met with empathy and compassion. But I do want to say, I'm recapping that because I thought that it was really funny that Mr. Church's thought right away was he's trying to poach Watson. Like, he wants to take his, like, guy. And Mr. Russell's really trying to get to it. And I think Mr. McNeil is just like, yo, I'm not going to tell you. And it's a sensitive subject. So I understand why he's being close to the vest. But it's just a wild thing for him to show up to somebody else's household and be like, yo, can I speak to a member of your staff without talking to the person?
Yeah. And he wasn't even trying to like speak to Mr. Church. He was just trying to sneak into the servants' quarters.
Yeah.
That's not where they live, but like into the area where the servants would be down by the kitchen, so that he could talk to Watson. And in fairness to Mr. McNeil, he didn't know his name.
Yeah.
And he didn't know that he was his valet. And like, that's why Church's suspicion is so weird to me. Cause he's like, he literally doesn't know his name and he doesn't know he's a valet. Why would he be trying to steal him?
I think Church is just always suspicious, man. Church be out here.
Yeah,
like,
Church is like very conspiratorial and clearly things. I mean, I guess Miss Turner used to live in the household, or shall I say, Mrs. Winterton.
Mrs.
but it's just like the guy doesn't even know his name. He can't. He's not trying to poach an employee who like served him wine one time, and he doesn't even know that he's a valet.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, and I think that. It also gives us hints as the audience to me that he obviously, not knowing his name, he actually knew his other name.
He knew his real name. Yeah, he knows his real name, but he doesn't know the name he's going by.
Yeah, for sure.
But as far as from what I can tell, Mr. Church also doesn't know that name, right? So he, from his Mr. Church's point of view, he doesn't know this guy's name.
Yeah.
Anyway, the whole thing, I thought that whole thing was funny, but I also thought the conversation between Watson and Church, where he's like, I'm so sorry you had to wait on your own child.
Yeah, I thought that
was. I was like really moved. I was like, oh my God, like, wasn't even thinking about that, but like for them, like, you don't wait on people who are of the same status for you. And so it's like, this feels like his fall is complete, right? Like that his own child would be there and he can't even acknowledge that's his daughter.
Yeah. And I thought Church was really, really like he was compassionate, right? He was like, you know, I thought it was, you know, Church is solid. I mean, like, I like Church.
I like both Church and Bannister.
Me too.
Yeah. I would just say this, excuse me. In their beef, I'm on Bannister's side, but I like them both.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was petty of Church to do what he did, for sure. You know what I mean? For sure. And then, I mean, I want to get a little bit into moving on to like the party and what we saw. I really want to talk about Miss Beaton. I don't like, okay, can we just talk about what Aurora has told Oscar at this point? What are the facts so far? So what she said is she's wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Her real father may be Jay Gould, and her mother is a Stuyvesant. Which Stuyvesant would be nice to know, since they're a pretty prominent family that nobody knows which Stuyvesant. Let's think about that.
Yeah, but no one cares where the daughter doesn't. I can understand not knowing that, because daughters always kind of take that like lesser role in these families.
Yeah, but I'm just saying from the standpoint of, if you're going to be, here's why I was like, Aurora, like I want to ask some questions, is the reason why I'm asking questions like that is because her real father is Jay Gould.
That's a wild fact.
And her mother is a Stuyvesant, right?
Yeah.
So if her real father's Jay Gould being a high ranking member of society, who we actually meet in this show, he's going to not probably her mom being a Stuyvesant would be a big deal that he has like a mistress that's a Stuyvesant. That's all I'm thinking about. That's why I'm thinking, I'm like, yo, who and what? Why is this not a bigger deal? Why is there not more tea on this?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's like a guarded secret, right? But then at the same time, Aurora is just openly sharing it. I don't know. This whole... Miss Beaton is cute and all, but this whole thing is strange. And Oscar notes it because he's like, well, why haven't I heard of you before?
Yeah. And then she says, well, she went to Paris to grieve her mother, is what Aurora says, and she talks about, you know, she was in Paris, which is, you know, it's cool, but it's like, this is like, so her mother's Stuyvesant, she went to grieve her mother who passed, like, this is a pretty big deal. Yeah, it seems, anyway, the point is, I just feel like Aurora is like, yo, check her out, here's all the details, and those details are like, yo, but I need more details for your details. Anyway, I guess, like, he's so desperate, he's not asking any questions. He's, like, super desperate. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, and she's very sweet. She's,
for sure.
I wouldn't say she's flirting with him, but she's very friendly off the bat. So allegedly she's like, she knows his mother, or at least of his mother. Like, yeah. You know, like I get it. But I think, and I said this when we were watching, I was like, she might be an even match for him, you know? Like,
yeah, for sure.
She seems smart and savvy. She's lived abroad. I don't think this is going to be a Gladys situation. Gladys is like lived in her mother's shadow. This girl seems a little bit more worldly.
Yeah, definitely more than Gladys, for sure. Yeah, I agree with you. I 100% agree with you.
And I'm like, it's refreshing to have a young woman who might be a match for clearly a fortune hunter. Like, there's all this talk about fortune hunters. Oscar's a fortune hunter.
Yeah, you know, 100%.
He has no interest in getting married aside from it's what he's supposed to do, and if he has to do it, then he's gonna get some money out of it. And again, I don't think Oscar's cruel, so I don't feel like I get kind of excited by the notion of him and Miss Beaton, because they could come to an arrangement that would make both parties happy. Like, not every woman wants to get married for love. Like, if they could have a friendship and a partnership, then that might be fine for her. That might be what she's looking for. But he is most definitely a fortune hunter, and I don't think she's going to move the same way that Gladys did.
No, totally. I agree. I wouldn't if I were her either. I think that would be smart on her part to just be like, hey, what's this guy really want, you know? And, you know, at that same party, which I think is a great way to do things, is put everybody in the same kind of social setting like this. At the same party, we have the link up of Mrs. Blaine and Larry, even though Larry came separately.
Yeah, but only because his mother was like, so are you taking her to the party?
Yo. First of all, that scene is wild. Like, Bertha, besides being a social climber, may have also been raised by bloodhounds. Like, she she instantly like was like, what is that scent? You know what I mean? He was like, yo, you want all the details? Like, I'm like, yo, how did you smell this perfume so profoundly? How much perfume does this woman wear? Like, how much perfume does this woman wear?
Yeah, but Bertha knew what was what, right? She was waiting up for him. Then he shows up from a tennis match. Because remember, they're coming off the tennis match.
Yeah.
The next morning.
Yeah.
So she has questions. And listen, as a person who lived with my parents very briefly while I was a young adult.
Yeah.
How you gonna live under the same roof and not answer the questions? I know we can all be out there and be like, oh, I'm a grown woman, but not really. This is my house.
But again, she had one job. Why is he out here? At least, like, why has there never been, this should have been a search party. And also, let's ask a question that's really, really important. Where is Gladys? Where is Gladys right now?
Who knows?
Exactly. Gladys can barely go out in public without her mother. But Larry gets, like, you know, yelled at about his scandal. And his dad is like, boys will be boys. And nobody cares that he's out all night. Like, she cares, but she's not like, yo, you're not going to go out all night anymore. She's like, okay, well, you know, are you going to take us to the party?
Yeah.
It's wild.
As I said last week, the double standards are pretty rough. Like, this, the fact that Larry gets, like, a little talking to after this, but Gladys isn't allowed to, like, move in society. And I know that's the way things were, so I'm not saying that the show is being inaccurate, but it is just the fact that there's not, like, a moment of even reflection, like, this isn't fair.
It's tough, it's really and I don't want him spending all night with Mrs. Blaine, because he is one of three potential options in my mind for for one Marion Brooke, okay? I suffered all last season. I was early on this train. I was early,
early.
You were
out on Mr. Rakes from the, like, beginning.
I hated Mr. Rakes. I love this for Larry and Marion. I love this for them. I want this so bad. And they're, like, doing their... They have a nice little friendship. It's not... It doesn't seem like much more. They just have a nice friendship, you know? It's super clear Dashiell is, like, all about Marion, like, right now.
It was... I wasn't super certain at the tennis match, but by the ball, it's, like, extremely clear that Dashiell is, like, she kind of cute.
Yeah.
My daughter likes her. Let me see here. But, yeah, I'm with you. I honestly thought we were going to get a Larry and Marion romance at the end of, like, the beginning of the season, because I thought that's what was developing at the end of last season. And so the fact that he's off here with Mrs. Blaine and she's dodging Mr. Morgan and maybe entertaining Dashiell, although she doesn't really seem that interested in Dashiell.
Not really. And I think, and obviously she's not interested in Morgan. Like, Mr. Morgan is just like, whatever. Like, he's wild. So I think she's off of, I think she's definitely off of Morgan. It seems like they're kind of just like, you know, there's no real engagement on that level with Larry and her. And Dashiell is interested in her, but she seems kind of like, you know, kind of like, oh, just friendly. She's like, just friendly to him, not like thinking about him in that way. And I think, you know, Agnes would want her to think about him that way, but that's not what I feel like she's having. And I also think that Larry, I don't know, like last season, they hinted at it at the end of the season. So when I heard her say, I couldn't go somewhere on Thursday because they were talking about Thursday, I didn't think about the teaching job. I didn't think about it was because she had a job. I thought it was like, oh, they're going to introduce a plot where she's like, you know, talking to someone else on Thursday or meeting up with them. And I was hoping it was Larry and then it was the job. And I was like, okay, well, that's still in play. And now we got freaking Mrs. Blaine blocking and freaking Dashiell swooping in. I'm like, yo, this is killing me.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it's okay that Marion doesn't seem super preoccupied with marriage.
Yeah.
That's refreshing. Sure. But yeah, it's sure. Also that part I do find a little bit unrealistic because I'm like, well, what is her plan then? Like, is her plan to live off of Agnes forever? Like, the problem with enjoying period pieces is it does bring out like your worst patriarchal tendencies. And I'm like, well, what is Marianne going to do? Like, Peggy also seems uninterested in marriage. That's fine. Peggy has a job. And while Marianne has this job teaching, my guess is it's first of all, it's part time. She's not like the full time teacher. And secondly, like, I don't know if she's considering teaching as a career. So I don't know. It is what it is. You know, this show, as we said last time, this show's not really about the marriage plot, but I did kind of just want them to wrap up this Marianne and Larry thing so that we can move on.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, here we are with Mrs. Blaine and Dashiell and Mr. Morgan and God knows who else.
Yeah, and Mrs. Blaine and Larry's good name is in danger. But you know what? It's been some years since Agnes's good name was in any danger.
Okay. I need to know more about this. I looked up as soon as she said this because I was like, your good name was in danger. Tell me more.
Especially with what we know about the Dowager now, right? Like, especially
I'm like, this man made whole plot lines about the Dowager Countess having these illicit affairs. We got Prince Karagin over here. In the movie, we got some guy who left her a villa after she spent a week with him. So I'm like, ooh, what was Agnes up to in her younger days?
Shoot, man. That plot line in the movie had me cracking up. There's a whole villa? Like, good Lord. Yeah, she's Dowager was not a game. You know what I mean? Was not a game. Anyway, we don't want to spoil that movie for you, so we won't go any further.
Well, that's in the trailer. Like, that's literally in the trailer. It's her being like, I spent time with some guy and he left me a villa. Like, that's the whole premise of the movie, so it's not a spoiler. Yeah. But anyway, I'm curious, is this going to come back later? Like, I love stuff like this. Like, tell me more about whatever scandal was looming.
Me too. I love it. Where is Aurora Fane's husband?
Again, who? this guy?
She stayed matchmaking and doing all this stuff. Like, I don't know what Aurora Faye is. Ugh, God, why is she at the center of all of this stuff? Oh, yeah, she's a busybody. You already answered this question. It is crazy. She's all over the place.
Yeah, listen, Aurora's sweet, so I want to give her that much. She's not she's trying to help her cousins out here, trying to get Marion linked up with some guy that she thought was fine. But I'm just kind of like, I don't understand where, like, does Aurora have kids? Like, what's going on here? All she seems to do is go to parties.
It's crazy.
It's just party. Like, she, and that's totally fine. I'm not judging her. Go to the parties, but I don't get her character at all. Like, she's just there for the purposes of, like, entertaining and matchmaking. Like, I don't really understand this character.
Yeah. Aurora Faye. That's all I could say, man. So do we want to like, I mean, like, we did a lot of Googling during this episode, but there is a character that I think is probably good to talk about that is in Peggy's storyline, and he was here last season, and it's continued now to this season, and that's Thomas Fortune.
Yeah, I had not really heard that much about him. I had heard of him before. In my former life, I was a reporter for a while, and I went to journalism school. So he's a name that I had come across, but I had never really realized how influential he was. Like, I was a little shocked when I was reading, because he, like, in many ways, kind of set the stage for what we know as, like, modern civil rights activism. Mm-hmm. T. Thomas Fortune, I think his first name is Timothy. I think it's Timothy Thomas Fortune, mm-hmm. Was born into slavery. In October of 1956, he went on to become a prominent Black journalist, an editor, a publisher, a civil rights activist. He was born in Florida, and he experienced the Civil War and the Reconstruction era as a child. His earlier experiences with the racism and discrimination in the South made him committed to civil rights. And in 1879, he moved to New York City and became a editor for the leading Black newspaper, the New York Globe, which I believe is the paper that he works for in the current storyline. Hmm. He later founded the New York Freeman, which I mean, I've heard, like, that is a iconic newspaper. Mm-hmm. And became one of the most well-respected and well-known Black thought leaders of the time. He was a vocal critic of segregation, lynching, and the disenfranchisement of Black voters. I just want to take a second to, like, think about the timeline here. So first of all, he was a critic of segregation and lynching at a time when just saying that there was a problem with that as a Black man was probably quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. But then I want to take it a little further, which is the disenfranchisement of Black voters. That doesn't really get resolved ever, but there's no real legislation about it until the 1960s. So mm-hmm. he was way ahead of his time in talking about these issues and bringing them into the homes of the American people in general, but Black households in particular. He wrote several books, and he was a major influence on W.E.B. Du Bois, which I didn't know. That was a piece that was missing for me. I had no idea. Du Bois is there's no way to explain his influence. we could do a whole podcast on him. Like, there's no way to really explain his influence. And then on a personal note, was actually one of the first civil rights leaders I ever read mm-hmm. his work. So, like, for me, I was like, wow, like, that's taking it back for me, because I remember being exposed to his work when I was mm-hmm. too young to really understand it. So as I was saying, he really helped build the foundation of what became the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s. And I just love that he's featured in this story, because if this had been done like a little bit lazier, they could have picked a more prominent, more household well-known person. Not, I shouldn't say prominent, but more well-known person. Mm-hmm. He was very prominent during his day. But I love that they pick someone that we don't still think about and don't still read about. That's our, let us Google. We Googled that for you for this week.
No, it's a good one. I love this one. And I love that connection there with Du Bois. Cause you know, it's like you said, I read his work when I was way too young to grasp it, because you know, parents introduce you and all that. And then, you know, later on, like, I think it was about during the pandemic at some point, I started to reread The Souls of Black Folk. It's such a good read.
I haven't reread it, but I've read passages from it. It is such a good read.
Yeah.
And some of it is still relevant to this day. So this was the piece that was missing for me, because I knew that Thomas Fortune was a prominent Black editor before, you know, the Black Renaissance. That piece I had, but I didn't have the full picture. And I still don't. I was looking last night for a biography, because I think sometimes we lose these creators, these people who were really important to our history, because movies don't get made about them, and they don't get featured in these types of period pieces. They're not the household names that, you know, like Hamilton, you know, re-became after the play, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we lose this time period of Black thought and activism and journalism, because it's still in the Reconstruction era, but we don't really look at it, because it's still before the Harlem Renaissance. So it's like, I'm glad that this is kind of like what was happening in Black activism at that time. And I love that Peggy gets to be part of that story.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I think it's so fascinating that in 1883, like you said, he was a critic specifically of, obviously, you know, I think, okay, intuitively I would say, okay, he's a critic of lynching, makes sense, but that he was a critic of segregation and disenfranchisement of Black voters, and you're talking about 1883, like, because in a lot of ways, like, segregation, even though, you know, that was late, I think, like, people often tend to just jump right to, oh, segregation, like, there was a lot of people who, like, in the Black community built, there was a whole economy built around segregation for Black people, like, and systems and schools, as you know, we're probably will explore, I'm sure, like the newspaper that we're talking about that was geared towards Black people, the drugstore that Peggy's parents owns, even though we're in the North, it still was, like, primarily Black people going there, and he, you know, in that area. So it's just interesting that he was, like, already thinking ahead, almost 100 years ahead of, like, yeah, we probably need to, like, approach this differently. And like you said, disenfranchisement of Black voters, we're still dealing with that, you know, 2023. But the reality, the fact that he was thinking this way is fascinating to me. You
know? Yeah, and I think the other thing too is we don't always get our history wrapped into the American history. Like, there have been period pieces that are about Black people living in the 1800s. Like, that's happened, right? And I think Lovecraft Country did a really good job of doing some history around what it meant to live in some parts of the country before the civil rights movement. And I also think that Watchmen introduced a whole bunch of people to the Tulsa massacre who didn't know about it, right? So it's not that it's not that the stories about the struggle of Black people aren't ever told. But what I like about it is that this is not a show that's just about that. This is also an American story. This man was born enslaved and now is the editor of a prominent newspaper. Like, that too is the American story that I think this show kind of embraces, which is like the Russells came from like humble, more middle class beginnings, and now Mr. Russell has a building in New York City with his name on it, which I only picked up this episode. I didn't realize a whole, his name was etched into stone. But like that part of the American story of like, you can become something else. Like, you can break through. I think sometimes Hollywood focuses too much on what Black people have not achieved. And so to include a character like this who achieves so much and is so important, and to have him also give voice to how Black people felt about the way we were treated at that time. I love it. I think this is a great addition to the show. He was on the show last season. This is not a new character, but I think that I was worried that Peggy wasn't going to go back to that job. And so I'm so grateful that he's back in the story, that she gets to work with him again, and we'll see.
And that they're giving depth to these characters that normally are just like, I love that. I love that and I think like the team has some heavyweights on it too, as far as writers. I really, really appreciate the way that they're giving some, what we talked about again last season. We're like, we want more depth to the people downstairs. We wanted more depth to Peggy and her story. And I think that we're getting that.
So, yeah, they really separated Peggy and Marion's story.
Yeah.
Which is great, because she was kind of just like the buddy, and she's become a more central character with her own story that's somewhat connected. I mean, I think they could have done a little better of connecting the stories, but I think this is a good start.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
I also just have to give a shout out to Mr. Scott, who had me cracking up when he bid his daughter goodbye because she was heading back to Manhattan, and said, "Don't forget about us in Brooklyn." As a Brooklynite, I felt that. I felt that, Mr. Scott. I felt it.
He was out here trying to give us some extra like travel money. He tried to do everything to get back in the good graces. He is really, you know, to his credit, he is really trying to like 180 this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
the unfortunate thing about the type of decision that he made is exactly what Peggy said, I think, in last episode, which is like, it doesn't matter if you regret it because there's nothing that can be done.
Yeah.
But it is the type of thing that will make you rethink your whole life and the way that you've behaved and your priorities. And so I feel pretty good about where these two are leaving off. I feel like he's learned at the very least that there are things that are more important than what other people think.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Man, we are off to a great start this season. I'm loving this. Stick with us. We will keep exploring Julian Fellowes' Gilded Age. I'm enjoying this. So,
I am too. This is so far two episodes and there's a lot there. I was a little worried that, you know, last season there would be whole episodes where like one thing happened. Yeah. I was a little worried, but there's enough characters on this show and they're spending enough time with each character developing them that I'm looking forward to it. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing how these plot lines downstairs pan out. Right now I'm more interested in those than I am in the upstairs stuff. Cause like, what do we got to talk about upstairs? Oscar and Marion's marriage prospects in the opera. I mean, come on.
The opera. Yeah. The opera's the main thing. And I just love, I mean, by the way, when you said the thing about like the Russells having their name on a building, I just instantly thought of Cabbage Corp for all my Avatar people. I was like, this is crazy. Cause you know, Cabbage Corp and
Oh, here we go. Cora. Here Quora we go.
Had with the freaking cabbage
here we go
corp
with
thing.
The cabbage corp slander.
Listen, I'm just saying it was cabbage corp.
That man's cabbages were destroyed by the Avatar multiple times, but here we go talking about how he pulled himself up by his bootstraps and started a whole company.
He's also went to jail because he didn't really appreciate the workers.
He
I
was
mean,
framed.
I'm just saying.
He was framed.
Oh, man. Anyway, point being, this is off to a great, great start. We will get in touch with us if you want to give us any feedback or have any questions or want to just talk about the show, kinfolklore@gmail.com, and you can visit us on our social pages at kinfolklorepod. Hope you have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.